How's it going, everybody? It is once again me, Chewy, one of the hosts of the podcast titled Expert in the Myths Behind the Legends. And today we have a very special guest, and the topic today is going to be Hollywood adaptations. But before we get to that, let's go ahead and introduce him. How are you doing, Robbie?
I'm doing pretty good overall, a little better than I expected at this hour, but that's okay.
Same here, man. So why don't you go ahead and tell people about your podcast? What's up with your stuff over there?
Conversations with Robbie Sherman. I bring in, you know, the things, the people. I bring in the people I love to talk to them about the things I love, you know, and that's about it. That's about it, you know. there's nothing more to grasp. And I enjoy a wide range of topics, you know, and different types of art forms, you know, literature. You know, right now I'm, for the next like couple of months, I'm going to be doing like some specials on the films of Ralph Bakshi. I released an episode on Fritz the Cat, the first, you know, adult animated, you know, the first animated film for adults that was like a serious satire. And it had a 50th anniversary this year. And well, actually next year is the 50th anniversary. It had a Blu-ray release this year. That's why I should say.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. And yeah, I'm excited about I'm going to be going through Fire and Ice with my friend Thomas, and we have a new person to the show joining us. He goes by the name of Pop Vulture, and yeah, I'm Pop Culture Vulture.
Yeah, yeah. I like that. Yeah. That's pretty cool, dude. So, I mean, just real quick, I listened to one of your episodes here on the way to work. I think it was the one where you invited, I forgot her name, but you guys talked about...
Quirky Pop?
Yeah, her. You guys talked about Batman and a couple other things. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm a big, big old Batman fan. And they have a new series coming out from Bruce Timm that's going to be tied in with this new movie. And God, I'm so excited about that.
I mean, I bring the topic of Batman because that kind of pertains to what we're going to talk about here in a minute. But
yeah, totally.
Because what I've been doing since the podcast is on break officially, this is one of the special episodes in the little mini-series that I have been keeping going on, so that the podcast isn't just forgotten. Because I don't know if you've realized or if you've experienced that, if you don't publish content on a certain amount of time, kind of people just like forget about you, and it's kind of hard to get that traction back up, I guess, for us at least.
Totally. Yeah, hey, nothing to be ashamed of. I go through, I'm pretty hands-on with everything I do, you know, with my podcast. I want to have a lot of control with it, so I've been having to deal with technical issues and things, so I've had to like push back release times, unfortunately. But I seem to have more steady equipment now, so I'll have much more of a flow to my release schedule. You know, I'm hoping to have a episode out by the end of the week, actually, with my friend Ferris DX, a great writer, you know, fun personality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's cool, man. So that's kind of what I've been doing. I've been trying to invite people over and talk about just their podcast in general. I mean, and for this one, though, I do want to focus more on a specific topic, which is the I don't know how I want to say this, but I guess the impossibility of Hollywood in ever making a good movie out of anything that we like.
I thought we were being, like, constructive here.
No, we will. We will, of course, because... But, I mean, one of the things is that I was mentioning to you off the air before we started is that I do want to make it a point to say that there are a few good things in each of these movies, or most of them, not all of them, but I'll give you a couple of examples in which I couldn't find anything good. But but in general, I think that they do try in a way, in their own way, whatever way that is, to kind of get the story and the characters on the screen in a way that is similar to what they have in either the video game or the books or the TV series, whatever the topic may be, or the original source. But in general, it seems like they never seem to get it right. And I'm not saying they do this on purpose. So I'll be glad to see what you think about some of the examples that we'll be discussing. And I don't know, man. I mean, the reason why I thought about this topic was because I just saw the new Resident Evil movie, and I'm a big fan of the games. I haven't played all of them, but I've played most of them. I don't know, you've been a fan of the series.
I've enjoyed like some of the older titles. I haven't been into video gaming like as far as current like up-to-date video gaming goes for a little while because I just don't have the money to indulge in it. Which nothing against anybody for enjoying a good video game. Hey, that's cool, but I just don't have the time to do it. I run a little Sonic the Hedgehog fan page where I put up streams, and that's about what I have time to do, like a level or two of Sonic the Hedgehog here and there, maybe some Dragon Warrior. I also run a Dragon Warrior page, which I have to update soon. Like you were saying earlier, if you don't, people will forget. The first three or four video games have such a good air to them, you would think it would be so easy for them to turn them into movies. They're already aping movies in the first place. So I'm not a fan of the Paul W.S. Anderson Resident Evil movies. As far as I'm concerned, they're just bug out monster movies. Like they don't represent Resident Evil to me. Like I'm not even saying that just to comment on Paul W.S. Anderson's abilities, which he has shown to be a competent director over the years. He did that one movie, Event Horizon, I believe it's called.
I think so, yeah.
That's an awesome sci-fi movie. And, these Resident Evil movies might be perceived better, if they weren't tied to the Resident Evil franchise, because it just gives them... It gives them an air that doesn't strike well with fans of the video games. General audiences seem to react to it okay. I mean, they've had 5 of these things, right?
I think it's 6, dude, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, 6.
5 or 6.
Man, people like this way too much, in my opinion.
Yeah, dude. I think you hit the nail right on the head there. Like, the essence of those movies is not Resident Evil, I don't think. Like the essence of the Anderson movies, it's not Resident Evil. It's like he created his own little universe based off of this one already established property. And I will say that out of the whole series, I think the first two are okay. And I'm not trying to say they're great movies because they're not really great movies. But I think out of all that entire series, the first two, and more specifically the second one, is more tied into the games than the rest of the series. But again, that's not to say that they're great movies. I mean, because in part two, they do bring some beloved characters into the movie, which is Jill Valentine. They bring Nemesis. They bring in the other guy, Carlos.
Oh, right. I forgot about that.
Yeah, so, and some of the set pieces are based off of the second and the third game. So in that movie, I think they were actually trying a little more than in the first one, because the first one is a completely original story. I mean, in essence, there are no characters that we know from the games, I don't think.
Yeah.
But in the second one, yeah, but in the second movie in that series, I think they were trying to kind of start doing that. And then by the next time the movie, sorry, by the time the next movie came out, it was completely like, yeah, just do whatever you want. And I was like, nah, man, like this is not Resident Evil. Not anymore.
Yeah, it isn't Resident Evil, though I will say I think they actually become better movies the more like bugged out like W.S. Anderson gets. Like I'm not gonna like look at them as great Resident Evil movies or anything, but I can like understand like some of the world building he's doing and like appreciate it. But of course, all this Umbrella Corporation is slapped all over everything, so there's no getting around that it's supposed to be a Resident Evil adaptation. Mm-hmm,
yeah. Yeah, so again, and to me, in that series of movies that he made, I would say probably the second one would be the one that I would give a higher rating, but I'm not giving it like an 8 or a 9 or anything. Probably giving it like a 6 or a 7, and the rest of them get like a 4 or a 3 or whatever.
Oh, man. 6 or a 7? Seriously? Wow.
On the second one. But only again, because of the fact that it seemed to me like they were trying to kind of bring elements from the game into the movies. And just that one specific movie, mind you, because, again, in the other ones, it's just really not anything that is familiar to any fan of the series of the games, I don't think. And that's the only reason why that movie gets a 6, because it seems like the only time in the whole series in which they were. I mean, there's another one in which they bring in Leon and a whole bunch, and I think Ada. I think I don't know if it's part four or five. I can't remember right now. But that one wasn't done very well at all. I mean, or not, at least not as well as the second one, and that's saying a lot, really.
Since we're on the topic of W.S. Anderson, have you seen that Monster Hunter film?
I haven't, actually, no.
I haven't either, and I just couldn't believe that he put, like, American GIs in this thing. And I was just, like, so flabbergasted. I haven't been able to make myself watch this thing. Like, you know, I'll give Anderson credit. He has chutzpah. You know, he isn't afraid to, like, mess around and try new things. I don't know if it always makes me happy, but it's definitely... He's better than Uwe Boll by a country mile.
Yeah, so I haven't seen that movie either. I never played any of the games, actually, so I'm not familiar too much with... I mean, I kind of have an idea that you go around, I mean, hunting monsters, but you also kind of, yeah, like, collect loot and build better armors and weapons from whatever you collect. Something like that, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and, like, I haven't even played any of the games. I've just been watching playthroughs online because I think it looks sick. Like, it's so entertaining to watch. Like, and here's a funny thing, like, I have with video games. Like, horror video games or, like, big monster video games where it looks like you're dealing with impossible, like, creatures or whatever, they just scare the crap out of me for some reason. I get so nervous, so I never, like, play them. But then I can watch them, and since I don't have the responsibility of being in the avatar position, then I can enjoy it. It's like a big old movie to me. I don't have any, like, problem doing that. But, yeah, like, I mean, the monsters, like, look okay in the Anderson film, but I don't know if anyone wanted those plots to be completely rewritten to accommodate, like, these nobody GI figures that he's just dropped into the middle of this established video game franchise.
See, and that's what I mean. Like, a lot of times, I mean, I understand that you gotta change things because sometimes the story may not be, like... It's rather what I'm trying to say is that the story in the games is too long to tell in a 2-hour movie, so you gotta change things, you gotta cut a little some corners here and there, and that's understandable to a point. But when they change the whole essence of the source material, like in that case, I mean, why would you want to bring in new characters? Why would you want to bring in new locations? Or worse, it's worse when the new characters you bring in displace the original characters from the source material. So it's like, what the hell are you doing, dude? Like in the Resident Evil movies, like in the first one, who is Alice? Why is she even in the movies? Like, if I want to say that if they had made Jill the main character, I would have understood to a point, okay, like Jill is not, like, that's not Jill from the games, but at least they're trying to make one of the game characters the main force of the movies, as opposed to creating a whole new character that's got nothing to do with the original story and make them the focal point, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally. That's a problem in one of the earliest video game adaptations, Super Mario Brothers.
Oh, yeah.
like, why is it Bowser in that? Why is it King Koopa? You know, why is it Dennis Hopper as King Koopa? That thing has such a wild history. I mean, we can talk more about that, but I didn't know if you had a more pressing topic you wanted to go over before maybe we tackled that monster.
No, I mean, we can touch up on that in a minute, but before we leave the topic of Paul Anderson, I do want to give him credit for the first Mortal Kombat movie. That one was pretty cool, I thought.
I think it's tolerable. Yeah, it's okay. Like, it's probably the actual first successful video game screen adaptation, even though there's definitely an argument that that wasn't what fans wanted, but yeah. it definitely passes.
Yeah, I mean, but I want to say that, I mean, it exactly what you said. Like, I think you said it better than I did. It's the first successful one, and in essence, I mean, yeah, it's not Mortal Kombat, but it's better than I expected it to be when I saw it. I saw it in the theaters, actually, when I was a kid.
10 times better than that Street Fighter adaptation.
Oh, yeah, dude. Yeah, for sure. That one I saw in the theater. I didn't see Street Fighter in the theaters, but I saw it, I think, in the TV station a while back, and I was like, oh, what am I watching? This looks like a fan made, like a fan film, which,
oh man,
I don't know, dude, but yeah, so it's definitely better than Street Fighter, and it's definitely better than the second Mortal Kombat. That movie was horrible, dude. I don't know if you ever saw that
That movie, are you a fan of the cartoon?
I saw a couple of episodes, but I never really caught it because I think they showed it at a weird time for me. I could never find the time to watch it.
Every time I've tried to watch it, it's just been snoozeville. I usually turn it off about halfway through an episode because it's such, like, kiddie adventure stuff. Like, I'd say it's better than that Darksiders American version they ran on USA next to a Savage Dragon adaptation for older teens, I guess. I don't know what USA was thinking adapting Savage Dragon.
That's weird.
That's a whole other conversation.
Yeah, dude. So, yeah, definitely, if you're going to watch a Mortal Kombat movie, watch that, the first one. I haven't seen the newer one, actually. I think they released one, like, last year or a couple years ago?
Yeah. I think I started that at one point, but for whatever reason, I didn't finish it. I don't have a particular memory of it. You know, sometimes I do that with movies, like, for whatever reason. I have stuff in my life that just distracts me, you know. I'm sure it happens to people all the time.
Yeah.
But, you know, that thing looked okay from the trailers, and everything I read was, like, critics just saw it was awful, but every Mortal Kombat fan was pretty much like, yeah, it's Mortal Kombat, sure, that's fine.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting how there's always, or there seems to always be this kind of disconnect between what the critics think and between what the audience thinks in general. That's usually, if the critics like it, the people hate it. If the people like it, the critics hate it. It's really unusual for both groups to agree on something. Like it's. I don't know if you noticed that.
Yeah. Did you see that Sonic the Hedgehog?
I saw that one, yeah. That was fun. Okay. That was a fun movie.
It was. Okay. I had someone tell me it was fun too, and I've been like biting my nails, like, trying to make myself watch it, but I can't yet. And now I've seen the trailer for the second one, and that has Knuckles, and Jim Carrey actually looks like Robotnik, and he flies around in that little egg cruiser.
Yeah.
And that, God, that makes me so excited, actually. The trailer has all this very kiddie-like humor. It sounds a lot like The Adventures of Sonic the Hedgehog, you know, the humor-based cartoon they had, which I oddly prefer to the other one. I don't care for Sally and all the woodland critters. Like, I've never enjoyed that part of the Sonic universe. I am like full on like Japanese early 90s Sonic.
Yeah.
Sonic CD is the best Sonic like media ever adapted to screen. Sonic X is so frustrating because they got all these like digital effects in it, and plus he's working with the military and he has kids around, and that's just, it's all just a mess. I'm sorry if I've got to divert the topic, but I think Sonic the Hedgehog is a pretty interesting like case study when we're talking about
that. I mean, and unfortunately, I mean, we don't have enough time to discuss everything, but I mean, that's not off topic, man. Like, you're good, because since you brought up Sonic the Hedgehog, I want to say that I was never able to play it because I never owned a Genesis or a Sega system at all. I only owned Nintendo systems when I was a kid, but I'm familiar with the character. I've seen people play the games, and of course, when it comes to adapting that to the screen, it's like, that's one of the things that I mentioned earlier. You got to make some changes to the story. So the way that the character was played in or shown in the movie, I'm sure it's not anything like what's in the games, but it's still a fun movie. And it's funny because it's the rare case in which audience backlash actually made the studio go back and fix their mistakes, so to speak. I don't know if you heard about the whole controversy. Back when they showed the trailer for the first movie, the first ever trailer, Sonic looked really bad. He looked like a really poorly drawn cartoon character. So people were like, what the hell is this? This is not Sonic. Oh my God, whatever. So it rained fire on the studio, and they actually went back and pushed the date back several months to fix all these things. And I think that was for the best, because again, I've never been a huge fan of the character because I never played the games, but I actually liked the movie. I thought it was pretty fun.
Yeah, I'm very, very aware of the dramas surrounding that. I've been having some cynicism about it too over the like since that movie came out, because I always kind of wondered if that was a marketing ploy that was pulled, you know. We're gonna show them the bad Sonic just so they want it even more. But then there's also this element of that to where like they have to book these theaters ahead, you know, like they have to put so much time ahead. Like people don't understand the amount of money you have to commit to just to make sure you have theater bookings. That's why, like some producers have more money, so they're able to acquire more theater bookings, you know? That's why Tenet has more theaters than any Wes Anderson production will ever have, you know? So yeah, I've kind of tempered whatever conspiratorial cynicism I've had about Sonic the Hedgehog, you know, in that light. Do you want to flip back to the Mario adaptation?
Yeah, sure, man. Go ahead.
Did you see that as a young man, like a really young man?
No, actually, if I'm gonna be honest, I think I was already either in college or finishing high school. So I was already like 18 or 19 when I saw this movie, dude. I never saw it as a kid.
Are you aware of the reason why it's so dark and like insane?
No, I'm not.
Basically, it had a completely different director team, and they were turning it into like this Blade Runner dystopian type thing. These were the people that made Max Headroom, one of the greatest like satirical figures of the 80s and probably the 20th century. And they were trying to like flip Super Mario inside out and like show, like bring this world to. I don't know exactly what the ne necessary end goal in doing this to a children's property was, but it must have been better than whatever we got, because basically they were taking so long to do these things and having so much trouble. Nintendo came in, put in different, people to direct and deal with all this stuff, and they departed the project. And the amount of money Nintendo lost on it, you know, because they didn't even read the script, from what I understand. Like,
Wow.
yeah, like these people that did Max Headroom, they came in and they were just like, okay, good, you know what you're doing. And they just
Wow.
left. Yeah, so like these people worked for like 6 months, building up this crazy dystopian society where there's like hints of the Mario world, but it's also caked in a whole Blade Runner exterior. With like, and there's supposed to be like intense like sexual content. I'm trying not to be too bawdy on your show, you know, but the fact of the matter is this was a insanely ambitious in a manner, but it got taken away from them. And so what we're left with is the compromises Nintendo made to try to save whatever audience they were going for. So we end up with this big sandwich of disappointment all around for not only the fans, but people who are fans of these Max Headroom people, because once that got out, I'm sure people went back and were looking at it like, oh, okay, this might have been a wild, ambitious movie, because some of the effects on there were super ahead of their time and like also of their time. Like the people who worked on that movie, they thought that was some of the best work they did, like as far as effects go, like the technical effects people. They thought, like most of them thought, that was some of the best stuff they had ever accomplished in Hollywood ever. And it's such a shame that everyone was so frustrated by the production that it just like turned it, it just went into hellfire. And like people were getting like ridiculously drunk on the set and stuff. It was uncontrollable.
I mean, okay, so that's I had never known about this backstory, so this is all new to me, and it's really interesting. I mean, but I mean, it's cool, but the question that entered my mind immediately is why? Why would you want to make Super Mario into a Blade Runner type of universe? I mean, it could be interesting in a way, but at the same time, it's like that's again, that's not the essence of the character, so I don't know how I would feel
Yeah,
about
I don't know. I don't know how I feel about it. I was hoping it would be
that.
something to where like you'd have a kid like playing Super Mario, and like him playing Super Mario turns into the like crazy Blade Runner Super Mario world that they were going for or something. I hope that would be like part of the script or something, because that would at least give it a pretext for having everything so nuts. Like, we can only see the Mario universe through our televisions or something like that, and we always see it is 8-bit, and then they could go into the world, and then you'd have the crazy filled out Mario with all these dune landscapes and Blade Runner style buildings and hover cars, like. But I don't know. I still think that'd be too flimsy to make it work. And I don't know what they were going for at all. I don't know what the end goal accomplishes with that, because it still feels like it'd be a disappointment to Mario fans.
I think so too, man. But I'm trying to think about it from a grown-up perspective now. I mean, like, I guess it'd be cool to see Mario in a more adult type of setting. But at the same time, that's not really what the character is known for. So that's my whole point. Like, who would think, let's take this kids game and make it into this like film noir with sex and alcohol and all this. It's like, how does that even come into the conversation? It's just amazing the ideas that the people have, and if you have enough money, you can make it happen.
Totally. I started watching the Cowboy Bebop adaptation.
Oh yeah.
I went through episode one yesterday. And let me tell you, it's far more plot-heavy than I'm used to Cowboy Bebop being, and it's it's kind of jarring, I felt it was competent, at least, like, I'll give it that. I didn't feel unentertained. I thought when the effects were good, they were good. I think some of the locations felt a little bland, but that wasn't the worst. It definitely isn't the worst anime live action adaptation I've ever seen, and they're also bringing in much more of the syndicate and making that much greater part of the story than it is for a lot of the original anime. Look, they got 10 episodes to do this in. They've already canceled it, unfortunately.
Yeah, I heard about that.
If you're a fan of it, then it's very unfortunate. I'm okay with it for the time being. I may get to the end of the series and I may not care for it, but at the same time, I guess the book's already kind of been written on this. The fans are pretty upset about a lot of the plot changes. And from the way they're talking and from my impression of the first episode, I could see how it could veer into that. Like from the first episode off the bat, we're introduced to Faye Valentine just almost within half of the first episode, and she didn't come in until maybe the second or third episode of the original Bebop series. Mm-hmm. And her entrance was a much more femme fatale type entrance, and they haven't been doing much with her yet in the show, and it just feels, not that the actress is doing a bad job, I just feel like this Faye Valentine is much more abrasive than what I'm used to. Some of the best things about Faye Valentine as a character is her existential pain that she expresses, through these kind of pithy little bits of dialogue. And I think that's the thing about my first viewing of this, is that it feels much more involved. It doesn't feel like disconnected in the way Cowboy Bebop does. Mm-hmm. My dad enjoyed it quite a bit, and he said he liked it more than anything he'd seen with me. But then again, my dad probably hasn't watched a full-on episode of Cowboy Bebop with me ever. He's just been seeing like title credits and but I thought it was interesting too, because he was kind of like, well, they could have put new music in this. And to me, the thought of anybody but Yakko Kanoa, but I'm so sorry if I mispronounced that name, anyone. But the thought of anyone else doing that music for Cowboy Bebop is like sacrilege, because the themes of Cowboy Bebop, that this is a new lost generation in the style of the beat generation, the jazz generation. Any other music would be sacrilege. I at least feel, having that music there solidifies what we're doing. They did change some pretty specific character traits, but I also feel like they did that in service of turning the plot into a little more of an involved thing. So I guess it isn't the worst decision. It has motivation. Of course, John Cho is so much older than what Spike is in the anime, and Jet seems younger in this one, and it it definitely creates a different standard. But John Cho, he's killing it. He feels good in the role. Even though I feel like they're definitely making it more action-oriented in a certain way, almost to a point that it looks like slightly cartoony. It feels a little more slapstick. Yeah, I feel like this one, I haven't watched the whole series yet, but I definitely feel like it was made to appeal to a broader audience. And I think that's also the issue we get into with these adaptations, is that they're made to appeal to a broader audience.
Yeah, definitely.
Most of these producers and things, they think in their head, like, I want to get that heartland of America. I want to get those Endgame dollars. Like, they want to appeal to so many people, and then, like, the problem is, like, you can't appeal to all those people because these things have specific niches, and you already have a fan base that you have to appeal to.
Exactly.
Did you feel like that was a problem with the new Resident Evil you saw?
I'll talk about that in a minute, but I want to touch up on some of the things you mentioned because... for one, I'm not too familiar with the property. I've never seen the original anime, but I have an idea what it's about because I've heard people talk about it, and my friends like it, so they were talking about the show, too, but the Netflix show. And they were saying things that are very similar to what you're talking about right now in the sense that some of the characters are not who they are. They are, like, the way they are in the anime are not the way they are in the show. Some of the things that happen in the show are kind of different or they don't reflect what the show is about necessarily. So again, it goes back to saying that you got to change a few things, but then you also mentioned these people, of course, they're in the business. It's in the end, it's about the money, and there's no other way to say this. All they're thinking about is making money, right? And if that involves them changing a beloved property in a way that alienates or makes the fans of the original frustrated, they don't really care about that as long as they get the money. And to me, that's wrong. To me, that's not the way that it should be approached. When you're going to make a movie about, or a show in this case, about something that a lot of people like, especially, like you said, a niche audience, like kind of like a cult classic, so to speak.
Yeah.
If you're going to do that, if you're going to not appeal to the fans of the original, you're already in the red, to me. Like, you're already, like, fighting an uphill battle, and everyone is trying to come up with a new cinematic universe, like Marvel. I think Marvel, they had some missteps along the way, but in general, I think they get a solid B+, if not an A- for all the things they did. I mean, pretty much every movie that they made is good. I'm not saying it's great, but it's I would say out of all the Marvel movies, I think Infinity War would be my favorite in that whole series. As a whole, I liked also Winter Soldier with Captain America, Winter Soldier.
Oh, yeah.
I liked Thor Ragnarok. Which one other did I like? I like a couple other ones. But I think those would be my top three in that universe. And like I said, they had some missteps. I mean, Ultron wasn't that great. Thor 2 wasn't that great. I didn't like Iron Man 2 or 3 that much, to be honest, either. But in general, I think everyone is trying to get the cinematic universe of movies interconnected and just create this multi-billion dollar monster. And again, if you're not gonna start by appealing to the core fans of the property, you're already gonna fight this uphill battle, and it's gonna be really difficult to pull that off, man. Kind of like what happened to Justice League, if you ever saw that movie.
Oh, yes, and I've seen the Snyder Cut, too, and compared to that original theatrical cut that was completed by Whedon, it's a whole nother level. It's definitely better, by far.
I haven't seen the Snyder Cut, but I've heard really good things about it, and I want to see it eventually. But I mean, I saw the Joss Whedon stuff, and or the one that came out, but that Joss Whedon finished.
Yeah.
And that, to me, it's the completely wrong way to approach like how to make a universe. Because, dude, honestly, I mean, of course, you got to take into account that Snyder had to leave because of family reasons. You know, his daughter unfortunately passed away. But yes, at the same time, you bring in someone that's got a completely different point of view on things, that so you got a director going in one direction, and to finish this movie you bring somebody that's going to pull it in the completely opposite direction at the very last minute. It's going to cost you millions of dollars in reshoots and this and that, and it's like, I don't know, man. I think they dropped the ball on that one big time. But besides even all that stuff, the amount of story and characters they try to push into one movie to establish this thing, that's not how it's done, because Marvel showed us, and again, you may like or not like the movies, and you, I mean just the audience in general, but I think that was the right way to do it, you know, establish each character individually in the movie, and then bring them all together into one big thing. And that's not what happened with Justice League. They had established Batman and Superman a little bit. Yeah. And then for this one, they brought in like the Flash and Cyborg and all these things. And I was like, man, it just felt rushed to me. Like they had too much material to cram into a 2.5 hour movie. And that's not really a good way to do things, I don't think.
Well, I also think Whedon brought in so many reshoots. Like when you watch the Snyder Cut, man, it's such a different movie. Like so many of the pointless quips are gone, and they're kind of replaced with some of like Snyder's lesser impulses. You know, it's definitely a Zack Snyder film, depending on how much your love for that is. I have my issues with Zack Snyder. His version of Watchmen is equally as fascinating as it is frustrating.
Yeah.
You know, but that being said, look, this, the 4-hour cut is what it should have been, because let me tell you something, it fleshes out these characters in the way they needed to be fleshed out in the original cut. Like, the Flash has something so much more human about him. He has something so much more interesting going on about him, even though I don't think it's done as well as it could have been. It's still infinitely better than whatever was going on in that Whedon cut. Aquaman has a far cooler exit. Yeah. And Cyborg finally gets his due, because he was supposed to be the main attraction of the original Justice League cut. It was supposed to be like Cyborg's big game, and everyone was going to kind of band about him to help make this work. Mm-hmm. And yeah, having him actually be fleshed out in the movie the way he needed to be, it was vindicating. Say what you want about Zack Snyder, but I feel like for this 4-hour cut, he did what he could to make it, you know, proper, like what he actually should have been able to do the first time, you know, barring unfortunate circumstances, you know.
Yeah, of course. And I think that could have been done in a way that similar to Marvel, what they did with the Thanos thing, where they did Infinity War and then they had Endgame. So it's basically two, or a huge story that was split into two movies. I think that's what DC should have done with Justice League, if anything. Like you said, I mean, I haven't seen the Snyder Cut yet, like I said, but I mean, if it's a 4 or 5 hour edit, I mean, you could have easily done that as one movie and then give it like a year or whatever and then drop the second part, kind of like what Marvel did. And again, I'm not saying that Marvel is the best thing ever. I mean, to me, it's a really good and entertaining series of movies for the most part. I mean, there's a few missteps here and there that I wasn't too much of a fan of.
Are you a fan of the Ant-Man series?
I liked the second one. The first one was a little weird. I'm kind of waiting to see what they do with the third one. I think the second one, if I was going to rate the movies, I would give Ant-Man 2 maybe like a point or two more than Ant-Man 1. And I'm trying to see these movies as an outsider, because I was never a comic collector. I mean, I'm familiar with the characters to a point, but I was never into the comics or I never collected any of that stuff. But as an outsider, as somebody that's familiar with the characters but not a huge fan of, if you want to say it like that, I thought they were good movies. And by good, I mean like they're good. I mean they're fun, they're entertainment, they're cool to a point.
Yeah.
But I can understand how some people might feel disappointed, as I did with the Resident Evil movies, because, I mean, you got characters that you grew up reading about or collecting figures or playing games or whatever the case is, and then you see this thing on the screen and it's like, that's not the character that I grew up with. Who is this?
Well, that's kind of the thing that makes the Marvel movies the moneymakers, right? Is that they're capable of appealing to a person like you, a person who isn't necessarily a comic book fan in the way a traditional comic book nerd might be, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I've ingested just enough of these comic books over the years, you know, through scrapped funds and other means, to be able to, like, look at some of these movies and be like, okay, these are fine, But there's also these issues too where I would like it to reflect more of what I've been reading or whatever. Like the Ant-Man movies on a visual level are probably some of the most pure kinetic comic book movies ever made. They capture some of the psychedelic like imagery that was pertinent throughout Marvel in the 60s and 70s, and that's a big problem I have with some of these movies, is that they just don't feel strange enough. Like mm-hmm. they feel like they are meant to appeal to a broader base, and they don't pick up some of the peculiarities of the Marvel universe. Like Spider-Man 3, of course, is one of the biggest disappointments as a Spider-Man fan. Yeah. I'm sure there's a good argument to be held for it as a camp treat, which I can't say I've ever found that in it. I hate the whole emo Peter Parker thing. That's too much. Venom is not given his due. I'm very frustrated by the newer Venom movies. The first one, like the first 45 minutes of that movie, there's practically nothing going on that I think should constitute an interesting Venom's origin story. But of course, like the effects work on those have good moments and things, and they are like they're like entertaining B movies. The second one I saw recently, and it was so much better than that first one, because it felt like we had actual plot going, and I felt like I had a reason to be there, even though of course there were just little moments that gave away how how tucked in the whole production felt. You know, like it definitely felt there were things that they kind of softened that made it not go down quite the way I wanted to, but it was still infinitely better than the first one. Like the best thing about the first one, and I think we also need to examine this through all the Marvel movies, is its villain, Riz Ahmed. The actor named Riz Ahmed, and he brings such personality to a role that has almost no personality that any screenwriter could write. But because he's there, you know, taking these words and adding that necessary twist, they come off really good and menacing. And I laughed, you know, like hard cackles a few times. Just him delivering standard lines. And I think that's where the Marvel movies kind of like drop the ball here and there for mm-hmm. comic book fans. They create these villains that are capable of being figured out in a movie or two, when a lot of these villains have their own universes that they're inhabiting. And of course, they've corrected some of that over the years. They've gotten better about that through the Infinity War, Endgame, you know, saga. Of course, Thanos is probably one of the great villains of any screen iteration, just because of Joshua. I forgot his name. I'm so sorry. Brolin, yes. Josh Brolin, a goat, and he's one in probably, I said a different movie the other day, but I was thinking about it last night. This is probably my favorite superhero movie ever, Deadpool 2. I think it just works as a Deadpool movie for what fans want out of Deadpool. I think a bigger audience can appreciate. It's not so convoluted and irritating that a bigger audience can't appreciate it. Like, it's, you know, the first Deadpool was fine, but of course it dealt with budget cuts that limited its scope for what it could do, and they had to do all these reshoots. But that second one is just so on the money, and it felt like what was good about that Rob Liefeld run, you know, like in the early 90s. And of course, Deadpool has had his ups and downs as a character with different creators. I'm not terribly big on Kevin Smith's run as a Deadpool writer. There's, you know, people can go and find those. I may be rambling here, so I'm so sorry. But, you know, like, I think, you know, at least with the Marvel movies, we can say that they are well-made entertainment, usually. There's only two or three I don't think are that great of movies. And I can't say I'm too hot on Thor. That's a personal preference.
Yeah.
I have friends who really appreciate the Thor movies because they add a Wagnerian element to the you know, Marvel universe. And of course that just kind of flies by me. It just feels a little pretentious. But you know, even then I think he's a good comic book adaptation from what I've seen of him throughout the years. There are definitely good things about the Thor movies. Stellan Skarsgård is good in those movies, even though he's not, like, the most active part of those movies for sure. And he had a really interesting conversation I heard the other day, where he was talking about how, like, Hollywood usually makes movies in a certain, like, they make movies in like 10 to 50 million a lot of the time, and that's why we get movies the way we do, because Hollywood wants to make movies within a certain amount of money so they can spend that money around the way they want to even like come up with a financial gain if there is a loss on some level.
Yeah, of course. And well, just to touch up on a couple of things you talked about, I mean, I see Spider-Man 3 is another example of them trying to cram too much story into one movie, because they had what, 3 or 4 villains in that story, and it's like, dude, like, there's no time to flesh all these things out. We had never seen Venom in that universe. We had never seen Sandman. I don't think.
Yeah, and Thomas Hayden Church, he's just not the right actor for whatever he's doing in that movie. Like, just flat-faced for that type of drama, it just doesn't work. It never has for me, anyways.
Yeah, so, I mean, if you have that many villains into one movie, it's not going to work, because you need to establish the characters before you even do anything with them. And by that point, they had not been established, so... That's definitely, I agree with you. It was definitely probably the worst of that trilogy, the original Spider-Man trilogy from like 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And then I've seen both Venom movies, the newer ones. I thought it was okay, but the thing about, you got to keep in mind this also, that Marvel sold the rights to these characters, so they can't do what they normally would. So I'm not trying to excuse that or use that as an excuse, because I mean, the first movie I thought it was okay, but maybe like a 6 or 6.5 maybe. The newer one I just saw a couple of weeks ago, I think, and that one's a little better. I thought it was a little bit more fluid, like you said. The story actually was a little bit more fleshed out, but at the end, that's when they're gonna bring everything together, because if you saw the after credits scene, you see that Venom is now pulled into the MCU.
Yeah, you better put a spoiler alert on there in case anyone doesn't know. You know, just be careful.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, I'll definitely. Yeah, I forgot about saying that, but well, I'll put a siren. spoiler alert. Yeah, but so you see that Venom is now part of the MCU. So now I guess maybe they can try to change the character, and now they have this whole multiverse thing going. So I'm really curious to see where they take this. I hope they do things right, because it's going to be easy for them to mess things up if they're not careful.
I think we got more like frustrating adaptations ahead too, because of course we've heard about the Chris Pratt in the CGI Super Mario Brothers movie. And yeah, you know, the producer came out recently and he did a whole interview where he was like, no, we're not going to have too much of that Mamma Mia stuff or anything. None of that, you know, good Mario dialogue that you've been digesting for 20-something years. It kills me. Like, I don't know what the target with that is.
See, and since you brought that up, now it's the perfect time to segue into, or to bridge the gap to the reason why I decided to talk about this today, which is the Resident Evil movie, which, again, I'll try to keep as spoiler-free as possible.
If you do spoil something for me, then that's okay.
No, like, I'll just try to stick to like the cinematic aspects of things, and not so much the actual story. I mean, I'll talk about the story a little bit, but hopefully not in a way that will spoil that for you or anyone that has yet to see it. But, see, again, that whole thing about changing who the character is in order to appeal to a bigger audience, I mean, dude, like, okay, so basically, I'll start with the good things. There are, I think, a few good things in this movie. Number one being the scenery. I think the scenery was done pretty well. It's representative of the games it's trying to adapt. So it looks like Raccoon City. It looks like the police department station. It looks, you know, very similar. It looks like the mansion too. So it looks very similar to what the games show. So that's definitely a good thing for the movie. I think right away you see that the story is not the same as the games, and of course, again, you gotta take into account that things are gonna be a little different. But I thought the setup was going well. It was catching my attention. I mean, there's a few things that I wasn't a fan of. They changed the background of Chris and Claire.
Oh.
But in general, I thought it was going okay. I mean, the setup looked okay. There was a couple of things, little set pieces that as okay, this feels more like the games, because you got to remember the games were more focused about survival horror and psychological horror than they were about action, like at least the first two or three games, right? Yep. It's not until Resident Evil 4 that it became a little bit more action based. So some of the set pieces that happened, I thought were like, you know what, this is not too bad. This is actually okay. Like, I like this. You know, I like where this is going.
Yeah.
And then, but halfway through, everything fell apart, and I was like, oh my god, what are they doing? Because again, they try to fit too much story into one single movie. They could have split this into two movies and fleshed out the story elements a lot more, fleshed out the characters a lot more. All I'm gonna say is, I am not happy with the way they showed Leon, and I'm not talking about the way the guy looks, because that was a big thing for a lot of people. They were like, oh my god, he doesn't even look like Leon, and I can understand why somebody would be upset about that, but I gave him the benefit of that. I mean, it's okay, he doesn't look like Leon, but let's see what he brings to the table. And the actor himself, I guess, does okay as an actor, but the character of Leon, the way they show him in this movie, I don't like it. I don't like what they did with him. They completely changed it. They made him, and I mean, I'm not spoiling anything here, but they made him to a comic relief. So they made Leon like the butt of every joke, basically. And that's not who Leon is. I mean, if you play the games, you know that Leon is a very capable character. Yeah, he's a rookie and everything, but he has his wits together about him. The way he's shown in this movie is like, oh my god, dude, it's just like, this is not Leon. Who is this?
that's a problem.
So that was definitely to me, as I was watching this movie again, like the first maybe like 30 minutes, I was like, okay, you know, this is okay. This is okay. You know, this is good. And then they brought Leon in and all the things that happened, and then since I guess they realized, oh, we only got about 45 minutes of movie left, so let's just rush everything together to the end. And that's the way that it felt. The second half of the movie felt completely rushed to me. There's too many things happening all at once, and nothing was really fleshed out enough for me to care about it. I mean, in a way that it was like action sequence after action sequence, and this and this and this, and it was just like, just, you know, let's keep going, let's keep this fast pace. And so the first half of the movie is pretty slow in the build up, and then the second half, it's nothing but fast paced stuff. So it's like this, it feels like a completely different movie.
I'm actually interested in that one, because the trailers, they felt like Resident Evil to me. Like the zombies, they feel like the first two or three games. There's that one zombie with the like melty eyes. That felt good. And I've been kind of hearing split perspectives from it, because film critics are basically saying that this is all a little too jumbled to be a satisfying movie experience, but it may appeal to Resident Evil fans. And now I'm hearing Resident Evil fans be like, well, what's good is good, but it doesn't necessarily appeal to me in the way I want it to be. So yeah, you're really confirming a lot of stuff I've been hearing from other people as well. So that's pretty interesting. Thank you.
Because also, I mean, basically every character is a little different to what they are in the games. And again, that's understandable up to a point, because again, time constraints and this and that, plot, etc. But Leon is a completely different person from what he was in the games. I don't think they give enough of a development for Jill either. Now, being that Jill is one of the main characters in the original games, like in the first two or three games.
Yeah.
I feel like she wasn't given anything to work with. She's like a side character in this film, if anything. She wasn't given too much screen time. She wasn't really given anything to develop her as a character. And Claire was okay maybe that's probably the character that I thought was the closest to what their game counterpart is, because in the games, Claire is a badass. She's a girl, but she's really capable of handling herself. She's really determined. She's got a lot of good qualities to her as a character. And she has that in the movie too. She's a very determined character. She's really capable with how she handles herself and everything. But it's not Claire. I mean, because of her background, because of the way they established this Claire's background, it's. So I would say it's still a positive thing. I still say that Claire is probably the best character in this film. Take that with a grain of salt. I mean, if you like the movie, you'll probably say that, yeah, that's a good thing. If you didn't like the movie, you probably say, yeah, that's not really gonna save it for me, you know.
Totally.
But I mean, I liked how they showed her in the sense that they were faithful to what the spirit of Claire was, in the sense that she's a badass. She's not gonna back down from a challenge. That's how the game shows her as a character. So that's what they did in the movie, and I thought that was good. But everybody else is a different person. They don't really reflect anything from what they are in the game. So it's like, oh man, it's really hard for me to get into something like that when the people that, or the characters that I'm seeing on the screen are not the ones that I grew up playing with, you know, or playing as.
And what's odd about all this too is that whenever you have people in charge of these franchises like this that are taking sometimes serious liberties that they think are, you know, baby steps, but in actuality they're taking giant liberties with this thing that is already a built-in industry. We already have a fan base for something like this. So the idea that you wouldn't want to already cater to that fan base to such a, you know, extreme degree seems nonsensical to me anyways. You know, like, you've already got the fan base there. You know, something like Resident Evil has massive merchandising sales. You know, even getting out of the video games, you got massive merchandising sales going on. Jewelry, you know, little plastic figures, you know, just all kinds of things. And you would think, like, the productions of these types of films would become so much better, like, than they actually do usually. And then I think it also comes down to where, like, when they get into these properties and they realize what these properties are at heart and how hard it is to adapt these within the frame of like an hour and a half, 2 hour movie. You know, some of the better ones, I guess they go into the 2.5 hours, you know, like some of the better Marvel movies, they go into 2.5 hours. While we're speaking on adaptations, one that's probably one of the first adaptations in Hollywood that actually got the source material, you know, a good 80-90% is that Lord of the Rings adaptation.
Oh, yeah.
We're never going to do a better version of the Lord of the Rings, probably. And even if you got frustrations with it, you can still look at those extended cuts and see exactly what they were going to do anyways, besides, like, the cut they had to make for theaters.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. I mean,
God for Peter Jackson.
Yeah.
We love you.
I forgot about that, actually. Like, those movies are definitely really well done, and they reflect the source. I mean, of course, again, like you said, they changed it because they have to.
If I may say one more Lord of the Rings type thing before we move on, okay? That Bakshi Lord of the Rings is a miracle, and that looks as good as it does, because his producers, like, basically cut his production in more than half, and they were supposed to have 6 months to do the animation for that thing, okay? They got a month to, like, finish up the animation after maybe getting, like, 25% of their live-action footage for the battles. So that's why in that film you see so much, like, unfinished rotoscoping where they're just using broad colors over film stock.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, the people who worked on that and finished that and made it look as good as they did in the time they did it in, they are champions of their art form. They deserve so much respect. Bakshi wanted this to be like a very, you know, dramatic adaptation of the Lord of the Rings. He was doing something in fantasy film that had never been done before, and in animation, like definitely in fantasy animation. You know, whereas like with Disney, you get these like more fairy tale type fantasy things.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there had ever really been, like, even the movie he made before that, Wizards, it does not have near the scope that Lord of the Rings did. And even though, of course, there are just big failures in that thing because they didn't have any choice, they just did not have any choice. He still was the best person at the time, probably, to do that. Like, and the success of that thing showed that people wanted faithful adaptations of that, you know. Fans were okay with it on the whole, and the general audience seemed to enjoy it. But the thing is, like, all these little producer things ruined parts of the experience Like, he wasn't even able to call it the Fellowship. They insisted on calling it the Lord of the Rings. They said, yeah. No one's going to come in for a one-part movie. Yuck, yuck. You can't do that, Banshee. Yuck.
See, and that just shows you how little these people are in touch with things. I mean, like, because, again, they're not thinking like fans. They're thinking like money, business people. And that's, I mean that may be valid to some people out there. I mean, but in general, they're in the business to make money. And that's unfortunate because to me, it seems like, again, they feel like as long as they make the money, they don't care who gets angry. They don't care if they piss off the original audience. As long as their pockets are full of money, that's the way that I see them thinking about when they make these movies, because that's what it seems like to me. It's really hard for me to think about them in any other way, because otherwise I think they would put a lot more effort into adapting the stories in a way that's reflective of the source material. So we're right about to close things up here, Robbie, but before we do that, I want to bring one more thing, which is I feel like sometimes maybe movies may not be the best way to adapt a thing or a property. So I don't know if you ever saw, there's this trailer for, I think it's a pilot episode of a planned Resident Evil show that wasn't picked up. So the show was never made, but I saw the trailer the pilot episode, and it looked pretty interesting to me. It looked really, really like they could have done something with this. I don't know if you're familiar with that episode.
Well, they have a new Resident Evil like Netflix cartoon that's supposedly like pretty good, from what I understand. Like some people are saying it's one of the better video game adaptations to a screen, and I think you're onto a good point in that maybe a lot of these properties need to be on television in a broader scope. Like think about like a standard. And this isn't an adaptation, but I'm just kind of using this as an example for the length of a television season. Like, The Simpsons usually has 23 to 25 episodes a season, right?
Yeah.
So, you give that, like, runtime to a Cowboy Bebop live-action adaptation, you can do that thing pretty much beat for beat, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I definitely think there's a great argument for the fact that television is probably a better medium for a lot of these video game adaptations, because the thing about a video game adaptation is that you're supposed to be so much of an avatar in it that they're going to need to write more story around the playthrough aspects of a video game to make it feel whole while keeping the story beats of the original video game. And yeah, I'd like to look this up. Was it just planned, or did they actually get this thing off the ground?
It was a planned series, and they made the pilot episode. It's on YouTube, man. Just look for Resident Evil pilot episode, and it's maybe like 20 to 25 minutes long.
So, okay, cool.
And the way that it's done, I think that's truer to the spirit of Resident Evil, because it's more of a psychological thing. You don't really see anything happen. It's, I'm not going to spoil it for you, but it's basically it's about a detective investigating a murder.
Yeah.
And I'll just leave it at that. Okay. I'll just leave it at that. But I mean, it feels like this could have been really interesting, and it feels like if they had done it, I think they would have been able to do a good job with it. But I mean, unfortunately, the people that, whatever network they were pitching this to, didn't pick it up, so it was never made.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you that television is a better format for adapting. Like, especially comic books, like, Disney is bringing back the X-Men cartoon series from the 90s, and I think they're calling it X-Men 97, and that makes me so happy, because that's one of the best X-Men adaptations ever, you know, even barring its sometimes subpar animation and very true voice acting at times. It still captures what made those X-Men comics great, you know, to begin with. It's got that that great art style that looks like it not only encapsulated what was cool about X-Men comics in the 90s, it encapsulated what was cool about the older iterations of X-Men comics. And they were pretty true to some of those arcs, like some of those Chris Carter arcs. So I'm definitely looking forward to more TV shows out of Marvel than I am movies. I've been watching Hawkeye, and it's okay, but I'm definitely I'm interested in bigger characters coming in. The What If series was a good start, it still didn't give me quite what I wanted. I thought there were times where the tone was off. The Agent Carter episode where she became like Captain Carter, that felt good. Like that felt like it had the right spirit to it. Uh-huh. And yeah, of course it gives a nice little wrap up of the romance with Peggy and Steve. And we didn't get to see much of that really throughout the movies. It's more of a tentative thing for Steve.
That's cool, dude. I mean, I haven't seen any of the Marvel shows or anything like that, but I'm planning on, so hopefully I'll be able to catch those soon. And, well, Robbie, unfortunately, I mean, we could talk about this for hours, dude, but yeah. I mean, there's just so many things to touch up on and talk about, but we're coming to a close here, but why don't you go ahead and remind people out there that are listening, where can they find your podcast, and where can they listen to you?
I do a good deal of my advertising on Twitter. I'm on Anchor, you know, and that, like, splits it up into, like, Apple and Spotify and all these other areas. My podcast is named Conversations with Robbie Sherman. I also run a Twitter page called Sherman Sucks at Sonic, and that's where I do a bunch of playthroughs. I also have a Dragon Warrior playthrough. Rob Sherman plays Dragon Warrior. Yeah, so please check me out. If you had a good time, I'm happy to see you pop up.
Yeah, man, and it was great to have you, dude. And you can find us exploring the myths behind the legends. It's easier if you go to our Linktree page because we have all of our links there. We have our Twitter, our Facebook, Instagram, etc. So it's going to be under linktree.com/mythsbehindLGDS. You can find all of those links there. You can find our Anchor streaming. You can find basically everything that we do on social media. It's on there. So once again, it's linktree.com/mythsbehindLGDS. And Robbie, thanks a lot for agreeing to this, dude. It was a great, sorry about the time difference there. I was a little confused, but thanks for dropping by, man. It was a great conversation.
Hey, it was a pleasure to be here, Chewie. Thank you so much.
All right, man. So this is the conclusion to this special episode about movie adaptations. And if you have any opinions, please let us know. If you have any points that you agree with or disagree with, please, by all means, go ahead and discuss that with us. So, yeah, that's going to wrap it up. And until we see you again, have a good one.